Well, please come to order. Clerk, call the roll.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Good morning, and welcome to the City Council's meeting of February 27th. We have some communication items up front, and we'll call those folks in turn. You have 3 minutes, as is the custom. And if you represent an organization, please let us know what organization you represent. Carla, could you please call the first one?
Item 160, request of Timothy O. Euchre to address council regarding printing and distribution.
Good morning. Yes, please. Just state your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Mayor and Commissioners, my name is Timothy O. Euchre. I was born in Portland 57 years ago. I've been in the graphic arts field for over 30 years as an offset printer, a printing press operator, typesetter, printing sales and management. I was the owner of a commercial print shop, Southeast 89th and Stark, for over 18 years. I was hired as a journeyman press operator, repo graphic operator, two, at printing and distribution, that would be P&D, for the city of Portland. For about 3 years. I went on medical leave in 2010. While I was at P&D, I noticed many things that could be changed to increase business to help the public and the city. I did go through the chain of command and recommend all these, everything that I'm mentioning here, and nothing had ever been done. I'm asking the City Council to make the necessary changes in the policy in the way every department within the City of Portland orders all its printed materials. They should be going through printing and distribution. Management did inform me that the departments within the City of Portland are able to order printing through outside vendors, you know, without going through P&D. I'd like to also see, let's open up P&D to all nonprofit businesses in the metro area, long-term or even 6 months to a year test. Retail advertising can be very expensive in getting the word out to the public, you know, about all the programs and help available to the general public. Nonprofit businesses able to use the city print shop would be able to help more people, you know, actually help everybody probably. P&D also they do not have an active sales force going out and visiting all their customers. And that would also increase the business in a big way. 31 seconds. Anyway, that's just about it. I have everything. I gave her a list of everything over there.
Yeah, gotcha.
And I'm hoping this will help or give you a push to make things a little bit better.
Thank you very much. And I appreciate your suggestion. Make sure that guy standing over there by the window has your contact information, because we're in the process of doing our budget, and ways to do things differently are very much timely right now. So
thanks for your time.
Thank you. Great, thanks very much. Carla, next one, please.
Item 161, request of Jason Kirsten to address council regarding homeless proposal.
Mr. Kirsten, is he here? Nope. Okay, maybe we can go to the next one and see if he... Oh, okay. Come on up, just in time. That's okay. Just state your name for the record, and if you're representing an organization, let us know.
Morning, City Council, Mayor. My name is Jason Kirsten. I'm the Executive Director for Homeless Against Homelessness in America, or HAHA. Today I come before you not only as an in-house veteran, formerly, but as a former gentleman that's gone through the system. We come before you today to, for one, give praise to Right to Dream 2 for the work they've done. The proposal that's being brought in front of you right now is... What we'd like to do is come with our own time and our own money and create another right to survive. Not take away from the work that they've done, but to add to it. They do great work, and we feel that we can do any, we can help that process by getting more people off the streets on a nightly basis. On an average, we have about 1,500 people that sleep on the streets every night. We feel that we can help cut that number down. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights states that people have the right to safety and security. We believe that we can help with that safety and security for the in-house community. Holy cow.
Made you do this out of breath. But okay.
No, we're not asking for anything. The only thing we're asking from the city is a place. You know, all we need is a place to set up. Once that happens, then we can do more for our community. Portland continually reminds us that it is a city of the people. We want to be part of the solution to help the people of this community, whether they're housed or unhoused. We're willing to work with everybody, the housed, the unhoused community. If you notice, there are several different unhoused organizations here that are represented today. There's Right to Dream 2, Right to Survive, HaHa, Sisters of the Road. We have people from Street Roots and Dignity Village and others. So once again, as we said, we come before you and ask just for a place. That's all we want from the city so we can take care of things. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for your willingness to help. Appreciate it. And obviously, we've got your contact info, so we will. Thank you. Okay, next one, please, Carla.
Item 162, request of Wade Varner to address council regarding homeless proposal.
Mr. Varner? Well, that's okay.
47 days out of surgery, but I'm walking again.
Good morning, Mayor, Council. Good morning. And by the way, congratulations to you and Ms. Fritz for winning the election.
And Mr.
My name is Wade Varner. I am the founding director and the president of Homeless Against Homelessness in America, or HaHa Now, as we're known to our friends. I came here today to tell you that we're willing to put, as it just depends on how big a spot that you would give us, we can house as many people as the fire department and people will allow. I've put away $5,000 of my own cash from my settlement from being a disabled veteran that gave me my back pay to pay for all this. So we could be within 48 hours, we could be housing up to as many people as you will allow on the size of the lot. You know, it's the civil rights, it's the human rights that we need to look at this, because these, you know, you go out there and talk to them every day like I do and see how they're treated, especially by the armed division and the enforcement division of Clean and Safe. I mean, Clean and Safe does the best job keeping the city clean I've ever seen. Plus, it takes care of people that are doing that. Our rest area will include areas for specific areas for, like, women. The New Dignity Village, the second one that's authorized by the state, is that you're not able to take families. So we have places like Join who have said that they would come on board. We have 50-plus organizations that say they will come and help us. We have the time, we have the money, we have the people, and there's no reason why we don't. And, Mr. Mayor, I'm going to call you. Twice I asked you if you'd allow me to do this, and you said yes. So now it is time to do this. We have people. It's cold outside. It'd give them a safe, secure place to put their stuff. We're going to have phones there so that people can call them for work. We're going to have a work center. We're going to have a working kitchen that will feed the place. And all of this is going to be at no cost to the city. You guys are talking about cutting money. Well, I'm showing you how to house 500-600 people at no cost to the city. If we can do that, we can set a precedence for people up and down the West Coast, because both Seattle and Eugene have done this by allowing nonprofits. And we have our nonprofit status now. We're all official. So if we could just change the law or give us something to have the nonprofits that want to do, it's like there's several churches that wanted to bring car campers in, but it was a NIMBY situation, not in my backyard. People said, no, we can't do that. And, you know, the idea of putting us out next to a dump under a freeway or, next to the jail and everything, I mean, that's fine for them, but we'd like a place in closer so we could actually have services for those people. We'll have people coming in from different organizations to help people do the services and stuff. All I'm asking you for is time to help people help themselves. And that's the whole idea behind HAHA, is giving a hand up, not a handout. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks very much. Appreciate your willingness to help. Thank you. Okay, next one, please, Carl.
Item 163, request of Carl Shaw to address council regarding a homeless proposal.
Morning, Carl.
Oh, good morning, council. Good morning, Mayor. The reason I'm here today, and my name is Carl Shave. I'm with HAHA, and also want to say thank you. The main purpose I'm here today is because there was a lack of student housing, and my family and I, we actually had to camp out at Hayden Island, Washington Park and Forest Park. And what I want to be able to do is be able to provide a place, services. We've been able to get equipment from Free Geek to set up mobile workstations and a wireless router for people to gain services, search for work, and be able to productively go on and move on. It really hurts me to be able to see this amount of loss of human capital and this stagnation, and for have people to have no place to go and little direction. There's a lot of support to be able to do this because there's a great need for this great humanitarian project, be able just to help people, help themselves, find services, and locate help. The first lot is just a proposal. Ideally, there would be like to be something either on the west side or the east side, but something comparably closer, so people can gain services in Old Town and on the east side as well. Because travel is, as I found, is a great issue if everything has to be carried, you know, on a person. And then and for the people to be able to have to run from place to place, it's not a productive use of their time, also the services time and the city's time. We need to be able to quickly get these people and get everybody to be able to get these services so they can move on. And I want to say thank you, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks, Carla.
Item 164, request of George T. Nicola to address council regarding neighborhood safety meeting.
Good morning.
My name is George T. Nicola. I live in Portland's South Tabor neighborhood.
Oh, let's, folks, hey, let's let this man speak, please. Folks, let's let this man speak. Everybody else got their chance. George, hang on a minute. So I think folks are leaving while chanting. Welcome and proceed. Thanks.
My name is George T. Nicola. I live in Portland's South Tabor neighborhood. The most important service of government is public safety. Delivering that service is most effective when emphasis is put on preventing crime rather than punishing it after the fact. The preferred approach requires citizen input and participation. In that respect, I would like to praise the effectiveness of the crime prevention program conducted by Portland's Office of Neighborhood Involvement. Their budget is money well spent. In the past year, residents of my neighborhood have experienced numerous home and car break-ins. Although these did not involve attacks directly on people, confrontations over property crime often lead to violence. So even prevention of property crime should be a city priority. For this, our neighborhood has received considerable assistance from our current crime prevention program coordinator, Brad Taylor. Brad somehow got word of the crime spree. Through our neighborhood association email list, Brad initiated communications and suggested that he conduct a crime prevention meeting in our neighborhood. At first, Brad got little response, but he kept trying. Eventually, a number of people agreed to attend a meeting, which, for their convenience, Brad scheduled in the evening. About 30 people attended. Brad provided numerous tips for crime prevention. He offered further assistance, including help in establishing foot patrols. Brad also stated a willingness to attend other meetings and to accept phone calls during a wide range of times. Public servants such as Brad and the city's crime prevention program demonstrate how good citizens are the riches of a city. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. All right. We are to the consent calendar. I don't believe there have been any requests to pull items from the consent calendar. And if there are none, then we can take a roll call, please.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Time certain, 9:30. Item 165.
Amend Title 33, Planning and Zoning, to make it easier for property owners to do minor home improvements in the city's historic and conservation districts.
Let me just take a minute to start, and I know Commissioner Saltzman has some comments as well. First of all, I want to start just by thanking you for your leadership on this issue and for pushing for a solution. I want to also thank and recognize a couple of bureaus, the Bureau of Development Services and the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, for working effectively together. Along with a lot of folks in the community as volunteers to take on these issues. We've had a lot of active involvement from the Historic Landmarks Commission, from Planning and Sustainability Commission, from organizations that are advocates for historic preservation in the city. I know we have representation and testimony from some of them here today, but I just appreciate the good and collaborative work that's been done to address both the practicalities of permits and remodeling for people that do own historic homes, and the passionate desire in the city to maintain the wonderful historic fabric that we have. So just want to commend the good work, and yours especially, and turn it over to you, Commissioner.
Well, thank you, Mayor. I just really wanted to sort of join in on the thank yous. I think this is a great example of our government, our city government, being responsive to concerns raised by neighbors, primarily in the Irvington neighborhood, but these issues are raised also in the Buckman area. And around the cost and expense and the scope of design review and how it relates to home improvements. So I think the product before us is a great product. I think it responds to those concerns. So I just want to say thanks to all the people who worked on this. And I know a lot of you won't be here next week when we vote, so I want to get my comments out now. But when these controversies in the Irvington District and in the Buckman neighborhood first surfaced last spring, the Bureau of Development Services and the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability worked hard to come up with solutions, and they did so quickly. And so those solutions are before us today. So first off, a big thank you to the two Bureau Directors, Paul Scarlett with the Bureau of Development Services and Susan Anderson with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. This project was a team effort between the two bureaus and would not have happened if Susan and Paul hadn't rolled up their sleeves and provided the critical leadership to move a code project through the system this fast. And also, of course, there's the tag team duo of Tim Herron with the Bureau of Development Services and Jay Sugnett with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. A great team. These two made with very complementary personalities, but that they're down-to-earth professionals that also get it. And whenever a code project, a code writing project happens in the city, you know that Joe Zender's been working overtime on that, too, so thanks to Joe as well. And I must admit that I'm very excited about the creation of the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources, for coming together around these issues. Your advocacy, your passion, and demeanor are what make it a pleasure to keep my job and to keep it up. So thank you, and I look forward to your continued advocacy to preserve our historic resources. And a big final thank you to the Landmarks Commission and the Planning and Sustainability Commission. Landmarks Chair Kerry Richter and Planning and Sustainability's Chair Andre Boss. Special thanks to them. These two bodies are incredibly dedicated volunteers and were critical to making this project work on the accelerated timeline. So again, thank you all for the great work. I'm really pleased that this project is here before us on such a fast timeline. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. I think the bureaus are here and ready to make a presentation. So Susan, Paul, kick it off. Thank you.
Morning. Susan Anderson, Director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and as others have said, with me here is Development Services Director Paul Scarlett and Diane Hale from my office, who will do the presentation. Also, Tim Heron from BDS and Jay Segnet are here to help answer any questions. Also here are Don Hansen, who is a past chair of the Planning and Sustainability Commission and also a current member, and Kerry Richter, who is the chair of the Historic Landmarks Commission, and they will make a couple of comments. I, too, want to thank Commissioner Saltzman for his leadership on this. He really kind of pushed us to say, can't you guys get together and do this pretty quickly? And we looked at each other and said, sure, we should start doing more of this, is what we said. And I think this is a good first example of us pushing forward on these kinds of things. The problem to be solved was that homeowners in historic and conservation districts often faced relatively high fees for relatively small projects and a process that could take from 6 to 8 weeks just to get done. And so a team from Paul and my office worked together to make changes to the process, providing for some exemptions and also providing more clarity. So we created a quicker, easier to understand, more predictable process for minor projects while ensuring that the process helps to continue to preserve Portland's historic character. We started the project, I think, in the middle of the summer. The Planning and Sustainability Commission, the Historic Landmarks Commission, and the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources, the three groups together really brought different perspectives, which was really important, and they also brought different kinds of expertise and worked together. So the result is a package of amendments that you have before you today that will provide much-needed relief to homeowners, and especially homeowners who are just making small improvements to their historic homes. And Paul would also like to say a few words before we go into the presentation.
Good morning. Thank you, Susan. I'm Paul Scarlett, Bureau of Development Services Director. Pretty much Commissioner Saltzman and Susan Anderson has already covered the points I was going to make. But just to reinforce the excitement I had about being able to being able to work together collaboratively, a solid partnership. We, as the Bureau of Development Services, we're responsible for administering and enforcing the zoning code, which BPS writes through the legislative process and so forth. And so as things come through the review, development review process, we identify what's working, what's not, and we communicate closely. This was one that was a pretty pressing issue. As Susan stated, the timeline, the cost, essentially we had a one-size-fit-all. And certainly not relevant, not appropriate. So we identified ways and solutions to make this more practical, more reasonable. And that's what we have in front of you today. There are a number of exemptions that's been created, a number of reduced process that reduced the timeline from 6 to 8 weeks to about 3 weeks. That's amazing. And costs about a year ago was about $1,300. We identified that was too much. We did some work through our fee process and then got it down to about $900 with this new code. We're looking at somewhere around 500 or so. We have a fee ordinance coming on Tuesday. We'll fine-tune that some more. I know that's news folks are anticipating, so I'm pretty excited about the ability to bring it down. But without staff, Tim and Jay and Diane, and of course partnership with Susan, we wouldn't be here. And it comes as a result of responding to neighbors, to employees, to stakeholders, to council. And I think, like Susan said, we have a really great template. It's almost like a pilot. We can look forward as to how to make this work some more. Certainly, I say that with some caution because we did partner up financially as well with BPS, and this is usually a legislative process. So we'll do what we can, but certainly on the financial side, certainly we have no limits on helping out with the time and the energy and sort of being collaborative. But this is exciting and hopeful that this will work, and we look forward to administering and implementing and working with the residents that are and customers that are coming in for these changes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. And good morning.
Good morning.
There you go.
My name is Diane Hale. I work at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and I'd like to mention that the public record for this project is in the room and available for review. Today we will briefly review this recommended code amendment package, and then you'll take testimony from community members. As Susan mentioned, this came about because of concerns about the time and cost associated with historic design review. So with that in mind, the goals were to improve the review process to preserve historic character and create a quicker, easier, and more predictable process for proposals with minor impacts. This is a map of the historic and conservation districts within Portland. The historic districts are shown in gray, and the conservation districts are shown with the hatching. Portland has 20 districts and approximately 700 individual landmarks. Individual landmarks can be located within districts, or they can be on their own properties, like the Ladd Carriage House or Pittock Mansion. We began this project last summer working with community members to identify their concerns. And in the fall of 2012, we worked with folks to develop alternative concepts. In November, we released a discussion draft with the first draft of specific code amendments, and the Landmarks Commission held a hearing on that draft in December. Last month, the Planning and Sustainability Commission reviewed proposed amendments and also took testimony. And today, we are here to present their recommendations for your review and to listen to additional testimony. Throughout the project, we have been working with a variety of different individuals and community groups, including neighborhood associations, district coalitions, the Development Review Advisory Committee, the Oregon Remodelers Association, and the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources, which, as many people have mentioned, was formed to help participate in this project. And that group includes representatives from neighborhoods, the Bosco Milligan Foundation, the Historic Preservation League of Oregon, the American Institute of Architects Historic Resources Committee, and a variety of other independent professionals. We've also held hearings with the Landmarks and Planning Sustainability Commissions, and we have been in contact with the State Historic Preservation Office. In general, we have heard support for the project goals and the draft code amendments, but we have also heard that there are several other issues related to regulating historic resources that people would like addressed. And we recognize, and they recognize, that those issues cannot be addressed with this project, but we are hoping that the city in future projects can address more of those issues. This proposal has three main components: new definitions, new exemptions, and a new review procedure. I'll go over the amendments in general, but they are also listed in a summary table on page 7 of the report if you'd like to follow along and view detailed descriptions. According to a review of past permit applications conducted by BDS staff at the beginning of this project, we think that these amendments could make the process faster or easier for approximately 50% of the applications that come into development services based on that analysis. The first component of the amendment package are clarifying definitions. Repair and maintenance are currently exempt from staff review and will continue to be so. These are things like re-roofing or repainting. We've heard that there has been confusion in the past on the part of property owners and staff around these terms, as well as other terms such as restoration. I have some examples to illustrate this potential confusion. If you remove a small section of siding that is deteriorating and you mend it with similar materials, that is considered repair. If you remove all of your siding and replace it with vinyl siding, that is considered an exterior alteration and would require review. If you remove vinyl siding that was added to the home after it was built and you reveal the original siding, that is considered restoration. This proposal helps address this potential confusion by providing definitions. The second component of this amendment package is a set of new exemptions for minor alterations that staff feel will not have a major impact on the significance of the historic resource. These alterations currently go through a land use review procedure. The new exemptions include installation of accessibility structures that comply with federal ADA requirements, removal of fire escapes that have been deemed dangerous by the fire marshal, and alterations to interior light wells. Other new exemptions include the installation or alterations to skylights and roof hatches, installation and removal of storm windows, replacement of existing basement windows, and installation of new egress basement windows in certain circumstances. In this project, we have tried to balance the need to preserve and protect historic resources with the regulatory burden that that protection can place on homeowners. Windows are a good example of this balance. Original windows on historic homes are often made of wood, and they are considered to be a central part of the building's historic character. However, homeowners often want to switch them out for vinyl windows for a variety of reasons. With this proposal, we are allowing that switch to occur to basement windows while we are maintaining the staff review for windows that are above grade and much more visible than the basement ones. The third component of the amendment package is a new Type 1 procedure that would be used to process minor historic design review cases in residential zones. There are currently three procedure types that are used for historic reviews: Type 1, Type 2, and Type 3. The complexity of the project, the cost of the fees associated, and the time involved with the decisions generally increases as you move from a Type 1 to a Type 3 procedure. Currently, most of the historic review activities go through a Type 2 or a Type 3. We are proposing a new type that shortens the review time approximately in half. And as Director Scarlett mentioned, we are anticipating that the fee will be lower as well. This new procedure type will have the same notification procedures as the existing Type 1. There will be no local appeal with the new procedure, although the decision would still be appealable to the State Land Use Board of Appeals. We have heard some concerns from neighborhood representatives about losing the local appeal feature, and we have tried to take that into account when identifying which specific projects or activities should fall under the category of this new procedure. The savings in time and then potentially the fees comes in part by dropping that local appeal. One of the applications of the new procedure type is for new construction of accessory structures. Accessory structures include things like garages and retaining walls. And currently, new construction of accessory structures less than 300 square feet in size is exempt. We are proposing to tighten these regulations a bit because accessory structures can certainly contribute to the historic significance of a resource. And therefore, we believe staff review is merited in more cases than currently occurs. In this proposal, new accessory structures in residential zones that are less than 200 square feet would be exempt, and new accessory structures greater than 200 square feet would go through the new, shorter procedure. Another application of the new procedure is for restoration. Restoration is an activity that we would like to encourage because it helps the city meet its preservation goals. Currently, all restoration activities go through review. The amendment package proposes that restoration applications in residential zones would go through the new shortened procedure. The last application of the new procedure that I would like to cover today is how we regulate facade alterations in residential zones. When we talk about facade alterations, we mean anything that affects the exterior walls of a building, such as removing siding, replacing a door, or adding or moving a window. Currently, these activities go through a Type 2 or 3, depending on the project value. This amendment package proposes that the facade alterations that total less than 150 square feet would go through the new procedure in general. There are some narrow circumstances when a project could also be exempt. This code provision allows for multiple alterations as long as the cumulative impact is less than 150 square feet. So somebody could replace a door and add two new windows, as you can see in the example, or four new windows. And as long as that total area of impact of those discrete alterations is less than 150 square feet, it would be allowed. So that covers it for the amendments. Today, we are requesting that you amend the zoning code as shown in the report, that you adopt the commentaries, legislative intent, and indicate that these amendments would be effective on May 1st. And I would like to introduce two other people that would like to make some quick comments. At Don Hansen, former chair and current member of the Planning and Sustainability Commission, and Carrie Richter, the chair of the Landmarks Commission.
Okay. And then you and Tim can stay here for questions if we have any. And good, Don.
I'm glad Tim is still here. He can answer the tough questions.
Okay.
I'm Don Hansen from the Planning and Sustainability Commission. Andre Baugh couldn't make it today. I'm sitting in on his behalf. We had a hearing on January 22nd and submitted a letter to City Council recommending approval. And rather than read that, I'll just highlight a few points. We thought it'd be a good idea going forward to do maybe a user-friendly handout that explains all of this when people come in and they want to make improvements to their house, also available on the web. And I think if there are fee reductions, it'd be great to state that real clearly also. One thing we recommended as a third point is after 1 year, perhaps we evaluate this process and see how it's going. And the two bureaus that have done an excellent job of collaborating could come and report to our commission and let us know how it's going. So like Commissioner Saltzman, I really admire the collaborative nature of this. It's just worked beautifully between the two bureaus. It's also a tangible, quick implementation project, especially by comparison to a number of our other activities as a commission. So I really appreciate that. My takeaway from all this, after reading the permit statistics over the last 2 years and also hearing excellent testimony from people from great Portlanders that live in these neighborhoods, is that people like their neighborhoods, their historic neighborhoods, they like living in their houses, and they're investing significant money to improve those houses. And I think that bodes well for all of our historic districts and our inner city neighborhoods. So I look forward to this being approved because I think it facilitates those improvements for people and will keep our historic districts and neighborhoods stable. Thank you.
Thanks, Don.
Morning. My name is Carrie Richter. I'm the chair of the Portland Landmarks Commission. And really quickly, I want to join in the big kumbaya session that's sort of happening right now and thank everyone for their hard work. Two quick points following up on what Mr. Hansen said. The Landmarks Commission is committed and identified a goal for 2013 to provide the link of handouts and matrices and things that make the code easier. And updating the Landmark Commission website with those materials, we're working on a windows and doors sort of advice sheet. I know the Historic Coalition is doing the same thing. And, you know, just making this information available, how-to guides, if you will. So I am privileged to be a part of this. I also want to say that it was great fun working with the Planning Sustainability staff along with Development Services staff because we got to actually draw out what 150 square feet cumulatively could be on a 45-degree roof or, you know, how that looks on the back of a non-contributing building. And it's fantastic when you have the folks on the ground who deal with these applications all the time weighing in on how this code language will work. And so, you know, it was fantastic. And we Landmarks Commission is committed to continuing the oversight on how this new procedure works. Every year during our retreat, which we just had 2 days ago, we talk about the cases that came the year before. And so we're going to be able to see if 150 square feet is exactly right, or if we could go up to 200 square feet, or how we can jigger this system to make it easier and promote the use of historic resources. So thank you.
Questions? Anyone? Great. Thanks. Good presentation. Thanks very much. Okay, I think we're ready for public testimony. Any other invited testimony, Diane, that you had? So, okay, public testimony then, Carla. Thank you.
We have 14 people signed up. The first four, please come on up, are Paul Falsetto, Kathy Galbraith, Barb Christopher, and Tim Askin. They'll be followed by Linda Nedekoven, Tanya March, Brandon Spencer, and Richard DeWolf.
Morning.
Good morning. So I'll kick it off. My name is Paul Falsetto. I work at 322 Northwest 8th Avenue, and I am a proud member of the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources. I want to welcome new members to City Council and, I guess, a returning member in a new position, in a new role. The Coalition, as mentioned earlier, is a unified effort of community members with the goal of protecting our historic resources. Now, the greatest amount of historic resources in the city are contained within our 14 National Historic Districts and our 6 Conservation Districts. And believe it or not, that comprises over 8,800 properties. So in one fell swoop, if you make things, if you make life better for the districts, you've done a tremendous amount of work to further the efforts of historic preservation in the city. These properties keep Portland's history and storyline alive. And they do it in real time as well. And the folks that own these properties, the majority of them, are as dedicated as the folks that built the properties initially. And so we want to make sure that any process they have to go through to do bare maintenance work is simple, easy, clear, and we're going to ask that it be cheap as well, that it be at least the cost that it was before the recession hit. And that makes sense to us and to homeowners as well. The historic code improvement process that was outlined by Diane and the bureau chiefs, we thought was an excellent process in the manner that it was quick and it was surgical. It was like arthroscopic surgery to go right in. We both had it recently, so we know.
I can relate to that. Huh?
And fix that meniscus that's torn to get right in there to the heart of the matter. And really the heart of the matter is understanding what are the basic repair items that you don't even need to talk to the city about. And what are those items that are so minor that you can create this new type one, which comes with a quicker process? We had to give up the appeal, the local appeal, but we thought there's a balance there. And then ideally it's cheaper, so you're containing a good majority of the simple things that people do every spring, and you're doing it in a matter that they can get it done quick and easy with greater understandability of what they're trying to do and at less cost. I think that this entire process is a win-win. This is a good Portland success story, and the Coalition is pleased that the two bureaus have worked so well together and the two commissions have worked so well together, and we would like to work well with both of them and create this this tripod, if you will, of effort to further historic resource preservation in the city now and in the future. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Kathy Galbraith, and I'm the director of the Bosco Milligan Foundation. We own and operate the Architectural Heritage Center at 701 Southeast Grand Avenue, and we're in the Grand Avenue East Portland Local and National Register Historic District. I'm revealing my longevity when I say this is the fourth set of historic resource code amendments procedures that I participated in. All of the previous ones were supposed to make the process better, but I think this is truly the first time that the very broad and diverse preservation community, both of the bureaus with responsibilities for historic resources, Landmarks Commission and the Planning and Sustainability Commission, all came together and worked to truly make the process better. Most importantly, it responds to the concerns that were raised last spring by homeowners, potential applicants throughout the city who were concerned about process and fees. And those of you that were on the council then told us to fix it, and that's what we've gone off and worked together to do. When private property owners take on the added responsibility of additional reviews for the work that all of us do on the houses that we own, they should know that they're adding value not only to their buildings, but to their neighborhood and to the city as a whole. The amendments package provides for four primary benefits, which Diane Hale outlined: exemptions for the small and simple projects, a new type one for quicker and more direct process review for the simple projects, where the current fees now can now cost more than the actual work itself, a simplified review process for what those of us in our field call non-contributing properties, the buildings and districts that were built after the historic period, and we expand the definitions section to get rid of all of the jargon and make sure that it's something that regular folks can understand. Our proposal has a short list of recommendations for a resolution for you to consider today, and you'll hear some testimony from people about each of those, and we ask for your endorsement and your speedy adoption. You'll be supporting the hard work of your bureaus, your public boards and commissions, and most importantly, you'll be acknowledging the support and the interest of the ongoing work of thousands of historic homeowners and building owners in the city. I also want to assure you that all of us that have formed as the Coalition for Historic Resources are not going anywhere. We're in this for the long haul. And you'll be seeing us as these issues arise as we try to make Portland's preservation program better and stronger. Thank you.
I'm Barb Christopher, and as a member of the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources and the Irvington Historic Preservation Committee, I'm proud to be one of the citizens who has pushed to see this code revision come to fruition. We're here today to push equally hard, though, for the restructuring of the historic design review fees that must work hand in hand with this new code language. In 2008, when Irvington volunteers were going door to door surveying properties in our neighborhood to create the city's newest and largest historic district, the minimum BDS fees for historic design review for a Type 2 project stood at $574. Additional fees from other bureaus were tacked on, bringing the total to roughly $800. By 2012, that same project could be faced with fees of $1,700 and up. Cost recovery has been in the driver's seat, and historic preservation has been taken for quite a ride. Our research has shown that Portland has the dubious honor of the highest historic design review fees in the nation. Staring down fees that are over 100% higher than just a few years ago, even the most preservation-minded citizens within our historic districts are questioning the benefits of these districts. Others are outright ignoring design review, leaving the city with uncollected design review fees, scofflaw projects that are trying to fly under the inspection radar, and time-consuming code compliance cases. Last year at this time, we came before you to press for new code language and a revised fee schedule. The new Type 1 review presented to you today is a great start. It will clearly identify a range of minor projects and fast-track them through the system. The preservation community has made real concessions in the language proposed for these reviews, most significantly, as you've heard, giving up local appeal, but also exemptions for work less than 150 square feet. With fewer costs to recover, property owners have a right to inspect lower fees. It's tough to explain to our BDS-BPS dual bureau system to a lot of folks. Delaying the fee restructuring at this point will only make it difficult for the average citizen to think that one hand didn't know what the other hand was doing. For this new Type 1 review to have real impact in preserving our historic neighborhoods, a reduced fee commensurate with the reduced review process must occur. We urge you to direct BDS to move swiftly to adopt the $250 single bureau flat fee for the new Type 1 reviews in order to bring relief to property owners right now before the construction season really gets up and going. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Tim Askin. I'm here as the
Push the button in the center there.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Tim Askin, and I am here as the co-chair of the Buckman Community Association's Land Use Committee and a member of the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources. I have much to add to Ms. Christopher's comments about the fee structure for historic design reviews in this city. The fees at their current rates, highest in both the state and the nation by several orders of magnitude, are quite simply an equity issue. Historic preservation is not and should not be forced to be an enclave of and hobby of the rich, but the city's current fee structure forces it to be so. As I'm sure you know, Buckman, which is proposing a historic district right now, is not a wealthy neighborhood. As of the 2010 census, the median income was $38,000, even excluding the high poverty areas west of 11th. Substantial portions of the Alphabet District Historic District have median incomes even lower than Buckman. And further, our friends in Irvington do not deserve their wealthy reputation. Irvington and Buckman Elementary have the exact same rate of 40% of their children in poverty as of PPS's 2011 data. Historic preservation should be an option for everyone. The collective history of the poor and middle class matters more than any individually landmarked house in the West Hills, because it is more truly the city's history, the history of the masses. We believe we should be able to afford to protect our modest neighborhoods, built and lived in by average people 100 years ago, without the constant threat of development pressure, upzoning, and the systems development charge waivers that incentivize teardowns of existing structures over the development of vacant lots and surface parking by tens of thousands of dollars. We want to be able to protect our homes and neighborhoods and be able to keep this already high density and affordable housing stock that the city needs so desperately. The current fee structures are causing people to choose to take their chances with the developers and the teardowns over maintaining their beautiful and historic neighborhoods. In conclusion, I beg you to pass this code reform package and direct the Bureau of Development Services to immediately implement fee reforms effective on the same date the code reforms go into effect. These reforms must be in place for the spring and summer building season that will be underway long before the July 1st fiscal year fee change date. Thank you.
Thanks.
Next four are Linda Nedekoven, Tanya March, Brandon Spencer, and Richard DeWolf. And they'll be followed by Wade Varner, Jason Kirsten, Carl Schaub, and Dean Gisvold.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor Hales and City Council. My name is Linda Nedekoven, and for the past 14 years, I have lived in the Ladd's Addition Historic District. As some of you know, I serve on the Hosford Abernathy or Hand Board and on the Hand Historic Resources Subcommittee, but I'm not speaking on behalf of either of those organizations this morning, merely as a member of the Historic Resources Coalition. And I do want to express my support for these much-needed code improvements. We're talking about need for changes to code language and procedures and fees and other things to come. And I want to focus for a minute on the other side of the equation and what folks like those who have been part of the coalition and other community members will bring to this effort for the long haul, as Kathy mentioned earlier. So I'd like to highlight some of the things that folks have been and will be contributing. In addition, they're first the countless hours that volunteers devote to the creation of an historic or conservation district. And in many of our districts, we have cadres, small cadres oftentimes, of people with extensive historic preservation knowledge. And they serve as consultants with their neighborhood land use committees. In my area, these folks for many years have been willing to share information on what a historic district means, consult with neighbors on the review process, and offer advice or suggestions if asked. In fact, that is how I first got involved in this process, having my own Type 2 review denied by BDS and my Neighborhood Land Use Committee at my first meeting, since I had no idea I was a contributing structure in the historic district. Helpful neighbors came to our rescue with suggestions of other ways to accomplish what we're trying to do with our remodel. And this story repeats itself again and again in many neighborhoods. It would be helpful if we could establish perhaps some stronger linkages between BDS reviewers and knowledgeable neighbors who are willing to play this role in an ongoing way. In addition, for several years, Hand, speaking of my situation, has talked about how to create a 21st century version of a welcome kit that would alert neighbors to the special things that are happening in and around their area. And we, of course, would include in this kit for the historic district neighbors some information about what that particular system will bring to them. The Irvington neighborhood already has a brochure and has a relationship with a realtor who can alert them when neighbors move into the neighborhood. Most recently, we've met with folks from BDS and planning to explore ways to improve the outcomes for historic structures on our commercial corridors where infill is occurring. And we hope to continue that conversation. So these are just a few of the things that we're looking forward to in the future, and are looking at not only ways to help individual property owners, but ways to preserve that entire historic fabric of our community. So thank you.
Thank you. Morning.
Hello, my name is Tanya March. And I'm on the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources, and I am the NWDA rep. Today I would like to discuss my idea of the user-friendly cliff notes or handouts. We need to have as a critical part of this inclusive effort to reduce staff costs by preparing the applicant for the system and to be able to address frequently asked questions through cliff notes, things that will help people coming in for these permits to know whether or not a permit is required, to help them understand the project's timeline and an estimation of fees. Some frequently asked and needed cliff notes would be Historic Homes 101 Guide, so that people know that paint is not something that you need to get a permit for. Something that also would explain the purpose of being in a recognized historic building and historic district, so that you understand and recognize the charm and the asset that your home or your building is providing. We need a window guide. There's been one that's been created. It would need to be updated to meet the new code. We would need a cliff notes for porches and decks, for new additions, new technology and requirements in old buildings, which would include solar panels, radon systems for venting that gas, HVAC systems, and ADA ramps. And we also would need one for garages and outbuildings. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm also a proud member of the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources. My name is Richard DeWolf, and I'd like to speak to you as somebody who works in this city as a contractor. I own and run Arcaform. We have 45 employees, and we work throughout the state of Oregon and the state of Washington with hundreds of projects in both states. That being said, working with the city of Portland and these, we do have the most complicated and expensive rules in all the different jurisdictions that my company works in. I also served on the board for the Construction Contractors Board for two terms, and its purpose is to protect the public's interest to improvements to real property. And that's all property, but today we're speaking about historic properties, and I feel like that's the same goal for the Portland Coalition. So my job as the owner, I'm an advocate for the property owner. Firms like mine could actually benefit from overregulated and complex systems, but that's not something that I see as a good business model. The expenses that my clients would have to pay for don't give any value to the property. They don't give any actual value to the homeowner. So it's not an expense when I'm figuring out fees for my clients that's any benefit to my clients. So we've reviewed some of the different changes that we want to see, and that's the user's guides, some changing of the language to better define what a street-facing facade is, the fees, and the type 1 fees not to exceed $250. And when we go ahead from year to year and we look at different changes, I'd also like to push that down to zero for people that are actually doing true historic restoration, because that is what the goal is to do, to save our resources. So in conclusion, I support the changes outlined by the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources. I know my employees do, and I'm sure most and all my clients would also support these changes. Thank you. Thank you.
My name is Brandon Spencer Hartle. I'm the Field Programs Manager for the Historic Preservation League of Oregon, and I'm here today to support the Historic Resource Code Improvement Project. For the last year, the Historic Preservation League of Oregon has participated in the Coalition for Historic Resources, and I want to give a little bit of statewide context for the work that they've been doing here in Portland. In 2010, our organization went statewide to talk about healthy historic districts, and we came up with four characteristics of a healthy historic district, and I want to read one of those to you. A healthy historic district has clear and consistent regulations that protect the district's history but don't prevent positive change. The situation in Portland today is that our design review process does prevent positive change. From a statewide perspective, the design review issue here in Portland is the most critical preservation issue in the city. The package in front of you would help remedy that issue and would allow us to move on to other concerns here in Portland and statewide. We know that this historic resource code improvement project would positively affect 8,800 historic properties. That's about one-third of the state's designated historic properties, so it's a lot of properties. I just wanted to mention three reasons why preservation has tangible benefits.